Hey, thank you for listening to my podcast. Now, if you're looking for help scaling your e-commerce business or advertising campaigns on Facebook and other platforms, then I want to invite you for a free strategy session. We help entrepreneurs scale from six figures to seven figures and even to eight figures with their e-commerce businesses. So if that's what you're looking for, then I want to invite you. There should be a link somewhere here so you can apply for a free strategy call and we'll see how we can help you out. Hello guys, Alex Fedotov here. Today we have an incredible guest. We have Paul Singh from Bump Health. So Bump Health is a company that it's a portfolio company, and they have different offers for women in it's after pregnancy or like during pregnancy.
We like to say that it's our goal is to have everything you need in that broad 20 years between when you decide to get pregnant and the day those children become adults.
So portfolio company, they have subscription boxes, they have physical products, media, and the company is bootstrapped. So no funding so far.
Nope. We are bootstrapped.
Wow.
And we think more people should build companies like that.
Wow. And profitable to the tune of $40 million in 2021. And these guys have consistently grown revenue, basically doubling every year for the last 4 years, and they don't intend to stop now.
Yeah, oh, you know, I like to say we aim for 2x growth every year. Sometimes we hit 1.5, sometimes we hit 2.5, but it averages out to about 2. So yeah, we keep going.
And you come from the experience, you come from the, like, we just had a brief chat before this, like angel investing, kind of like venture capital, stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, it's always hard to kind of explain, you know, the last 20 years of my life in 2 minutes. But yeah, I like to tell people I wear two hats. The first hat is, you know, I'm the co-founder and over at Bump Health. And then the other hat that I wear is about 15 years ago, I started a sort of a little family office called Results Junkies. And what we primarily do on that side of the house is we try to invest in about 200 new companies every year. And just like I told you about the growth on the business side, you know, sometimes you hit 220 investments, sometimes you hit 160, but it always averages out.
Wow. And so like that experience, so you've had that and kind of like using that experience, like seeing so many companies and obviously some of them obviously fail as in business, you know, it's like probably 80, 90% of them or kind of didn't do that well, but then some percentage. Do you think the experience with that help you to scale Bump Health so fast in a short period of time?
If I understand the question right, I think the answer is yes. I think that, you know, I think entrepreneurship is hard to teach, but I think it's easy to learn. I think the absolute best way to become a better entrepreneur is to start something. The second best way to become a better entrepreneur is to see a lot of other companies. And you know, you'll inevitably learn what seems to be working across a wider variety of them.
Cool. So you guys doing a lot of Facebook ads. I checked some of your Facebook ads. So what's working for you on the Facebook ad sites right now?
Oh, man. You know, I'd have to defer to one of my other co-founders actually primarily runs all that. You know, so I would be speaking above my pay grade if I told you anything like that. But I think that, you know, we, like many other companies, started out with a lot of our focus on paid channels like Facebook and Google and all the other things. And it's not to say that we, you know, have stopped. In fact, you know, our spend every month has generally gone up, you know, over the last few years, and that's kind of how it is. But I think that, you know, I'm not going to try to pretend like we knew that CAC was always going to get more expensive. Like, I'm not going to pretend like I knew about iOS 14 5 years ago, right? But what we did know is that high level CAC would always rise. If you overly depended on paid as your primary channel, we knew years ago that it would rise, and we had to actively build up our non-paid channels. But we also had to think about diversification much more differently than most companies thought about it, which is why, you know, it's easy from the outside to look at Bump Health today as a collection of, you know, businesses that serve mom. But the reality is that when we found initial traction via paid marketing, just like a lot of other people that listen to your podcast, I bet. But from the earliest days, it was baked into our DNA that we would not only aggressively you know, grow our non-paid channels, but we would also think about diversification to bring things down. So, you know, I'll just say one other thing and then I'll stop talking. You know, that one of the top four numbers we look at internally every day is blended CAC. So from the beginning, like all the way from the beginning, you know, so we operate the company off of a book called EOS, Entrepreneurs Operating System.
Oh, yeah. We just signed up our company with them. It's incredible system.
Yeah, no, it's great. Absolutely. And so, you know, in our daily stand-ups with my leadership team, you know, we all report one number. And one of the guys, my co-founder Lee, the primary number that he reports is blended CAC. And so, you know, that's not rocket science, but it's your paid CAC, essentially your paid CAC divided by your all your other unpaid channels or whatever. And so the point is that, you know, from the very beginning, we were always looking at blended CAC and then, you know, fighting against it, trying to keep it where we wanted it to be. Yeah, let's take it wherever you want to go. My superpower is to ramble, so let me stop there.
Cool. One of the things, and I was looking at this like Twitter chat, I even have it like pulled up now. So aim to build or buy a collection of businesses that collect $6 out of every $10 spent of a household over a 20 year period. Is that your goal?
That's the goal. You know, when I'm like nerding out on stuff, I like to read up on the histories of other large conglomerates or, you know, collection of businesses like Amazon, like Microsoft, like Oracle, you know, and you know, I think that, yeah, our fundamentally, I think it's important to understand, well, you know, let me step back. Selfishly, my goal here today is to try to convince other smart people that listen to your podcast to think differently. Right. I don't actually care if you buy anything from my company. That's not the goal here. But I think that if your listeners can walk away with one idea, it is that every time I say Bump Health, they should replace it, that name in their head, with their own company and apply these ideas to themselves. So for us, you know, when I think about Bump Health, I actually look back, for example, to the history of Microsoft. Bump Health, at the beginning, we started just like everybody else listening to your podcast. We were a product-centric company. For us in particular, it started with one subscription box offering that we had. But then we recognized, as soon as we figured out the customer acquisition model and the margins and all that stuff for that customer, we then started really thinking about diversifying, you know, and think about not only how to extend their LTV, but like, how do you extend their LTV by getting even wider inside their wallet? So I'm probably not doing a great job of articulating that, but, you know, we think of ourselves as a mom acquisition company. We are now distribution centric, not product centric. Maybe that's the key idea I want your listeners to listen to. Is that everybody listening to your podcast probably started as a...
If I'm kind of like, maybe I'm understanding correctly, maybe not. There was like a Chewy, right? Like Chewy.com, one of the biggest acquisitions like ever, like e-commerce acquisition. So, I mean, they pretty much were like competing with Amazon, just decided to take like a pet niche, totally dominated. Is that what you want to do, is like that like mom niche, kind of like serve that niche like from so many like different angles and beat like... Amazon, for instance, just an example.
Well, let me correct you real quick, and then I'll answer the question. Moms aren't a niche. It's 51% of the planet. You know.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So, and by the way, I'm not trying to be, you know, funny or anything like that. But like, look, people listen to your podcast because they want to make money, right? I mean, that's the bottom line. So the reason I say that moms are not a niche is because not only do they represent 51% of the planet, but actually they also are the de facto CEOs and CFOs of the household.
You're so right. My wife makes all of the finance, all like 90% of decisions.
Correct. You know, and I think that, you know, whether they're single, they're married, they're dating, it doesn't really matter. Ultimately, when you think about moms, we think about them as, you know, not only a large TAM, you know, addressable market, but also the entry point into the household. So if you, for example, start with, you know, if you start with them at the point that they conceive, that's a very emotional moment, very emotional moment, right? And then you grow with them. The LTV skyrockets. I mean, maybe that's like the thing to think about. If you're a numbers guy or gal listening to this show, you know, think about your own customer. Like, you're probably thinking about cost of acquisition. You're probably thinking about LTV. You're thinking about churn. You're thinking about all these things. Those are important things. But the what I'm trying to convey is that you should think about fighting those things a little differently. So for example, if you want to increase LTV as a subscription company, to be very simple about it, most people think, oh, how do I think about add-ons? How do I think about extending their subscription longer? How do I, you know, that, but let's go wider. Let's go wider. So for example, in our case, let me just use that example. I don't know if, you know, you've got kids or anything like that, but.
Yeah, I got a kid.
Yep. Okay. So here's the thing. Let's say you sign up for one of our subscriptions, right? Everything mom and baby need. Our subscriptions actually go all the way out to the baby's third birthday. So we can, you know, our LTV is 45 months, right? And that's cool. Like, you can take the number 45 and multiply it by the dollars you see on our website, and you can kind of think about the LTV, right? But here's the thing. You, it looks like, live in the US, just like I do. Yeah. And at least for our US moms, the thing about it is that as long as they have healthcare, those healthcare plans include thousands of dollars of free stuff that mom is entitled to.
Really?
Thousands of dollars. And now if I can extract those products for you for free to you, but I get paid for them. Huh. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm oversimplifying a little bit here, but that's what I mean about diversifying a little bit. Right. So now I've got this demographic of moms that are going through that, you know, the pregnancy and beyond.
Yeah.
But then then I'm looking alongside that and I'm thinking, what else are they going to spend money on? Or what else can I help them do for free or easy or whatever and get paid for it? So in my mind, I'm a really visual person, right? So the way I think about it is, if you and I were sitting there with a whiteboard, what I would do is on the X axis, I would draw the number 0. And then on all the way on the other end of the whiteboard, I would write the number 45, because that's 45 months of our subscription, right? That's our bump boxes and Bitsy boxes consumer business. But then what I do is I layer more rows on top of that. So for example, with healthcare, what I just told you about medical, right?
Yeah.
What I just told you about, the industry term is called durable medical equipment. Generally speaking, there are thousands of dollars of free stuff available to you for that pregnancy, up to one year after the birth, right? And starting a few months before the birth. So now, if I'm acquiring my mom at month 0, technically I acquire at month 1 of the pregnancy, because she doesn't know she's pregnant at month 0, right?
Yeah.
So it's actually, the whiteboard is going to have the number 1 on the left side and then the number 45 on the right side. So now I've got a subscription going for 44, 45 months, something like that, right? But now imagine I now draw a second bar above that. And look, the pivot point is when the baby's born, right? So now roughly 3 months before that baby's born and up to 1 year after that baby's born, I can extract revenue from her insurance provider without charging her any money. But then I can layer on, what if I layer on telehealth? Well, telehealth can go much longer. Now I've got a third row. So for example, telehealth, like, you know, pre-COVID, you had to go to the doctor. But I don't know about you, but after COVID started, all of a sudden my doctor was available for, you know, FaceTime. So, but how does that work? How do they get paid? How do they bill, right? So what if now we layer on healthcare, then we layer on pharmacy, then you see where I'm going with this. So I really want your audience to start thinking differently about diversification. I want your company, your audience to think about becoming distribution centric. So let me just kind of talk about that idea and then I'll be quiet. You know, here's the thing. Let's go back to the days of Microsoft. Right? Maybe that's not a cool company now or whatever, but hear me out. Yeah. Like, I study a lot of these guys. So for any of the history buffs here, I'm going to paraphrase. Don't kill me. But here's the thing. Prior to the 1980s, Microsoft was just like all of the companies that, you know, the you and I see all the time. They're product centric. They used to make an operating system called DOS, and they would put it on as many computers as they could, right? But if you look back at their history, somewhere in the early 80s, it's almost like that team at Microsoft looked up and they were like, wait. We have millions of desktops around the world using our software. What else are these people doing on top of our software? Oh, they're using it to make spreadsheets. Wait a second. They're also using it to type letters to each other, you know? And so what did they do? Then they realized they were distribution centric and they said, man, we own computer users. They use our operating system. Let's build and buy everything else that they use on top of it. And now, decades later, you see Microsoft Office, for example.
Hey guys, people have been asking me how we scale to multiple six figures or even seven figures per month without getting shut down on Facebook. And we have a very sophisticated solution for this that I want to share with you, but it's just like too valuable to give away for free. So if you guys want this solution, just book a call with one of my team members and we'll show you exactly what it is and how it works. And we'll see if that's a good fit for you and for your business. So just book a call with my team member. We'll share it with you so you can scale your business to multiple six figures or even seven figures per month without getting shut down on Facebook, without having inconsistency and with high profitability. So just book a call with my team and I'll see you there.
Look, they didn't, you know, they're building or buying all those pieces of software. So that's the thing. They became a distribution centric company. So we're a mom acquisition company. That's what we are. People think we're an e-commerce company. People think they'll call us whatever they want, right? We are a mom acquisition company and we are just stacking the business units alongside it. Because now anything I build or buy, I can shove right in front of that pipeline of moms that I acquire. So that's the message I want your audience to listen to is if you want to scale e-commerce, you got to start thinking of yourselves as a customer acquisition company and you build or buy whatever's necessary to go wider in the wallet.
Man, this is incredible. This is incredible. So mom acquisition. So think of your company not as e-commerce company, but a customer acquisition company.
That's the key.
Okay, so let's take your example, right? So you started with subscription boxes, right? So that was the first business, the subscription boxes?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Bump boxes was our first one.
So at what point do you decide, okay, so there is a need for let's say, I don't know, telemedicine or what other product is, how do you decide? Do you decide to acquire the company for find a company in the market that kind of already has that offer service, product service, buy them, or do you build it from scratch? How do you make those type of decisions?
Yeah, well, let me be honest with you. So we're here at the beginning of 2022 talking about this together. And what I would tell you is that if you look at the last 4 years of our history, all of the buying that we've done has primarily been distressed, meaning that we would find companies that were struggling, do what was necessary.
You buy them at a good multiple.
Well, you don't pay multiples if they're distressed. know what I'm saying? But now as we go forward, we need to start thinking about, when is it appropriate to build versus buy. So I just want to be really, honest with people that if you look at our history about our company, all of our acquisitions for the last 4 years have been distressed, meaning that they are companies that are failing or running out of cash. And when you find those targets, you're not paying multiples. You're usually just buying out the assets. Look, I alluded to this actually in that Twitter manifesto that I sent you, and hopefully you'll include it in the show notes or whatever for other people to see it. But almost all the way at the bottom of that Twitter thread with my company manifesto, I allude to this idea where I said that we will, when necessary, bleed out other companies financially, legally, or otherwise. We are very aggressive about growth, but very aggressive about protecting moms. Our actual mission is to protect moms and the families they love. So what we do, now that I've said all that, let me also just kind of talk about how we think about expanding into other businesses, regardless of whether we build or buy them, because I think this is relevant to your audience. So I like to tell our people, so we've got about 100 people on our team now. I like to tell our people that we are in the business of entrepreneurship, not innovation. And what I mean by that is we're not trying to build something new and innovative. We're not trying to go to Mars. Leave that to smart people. You got to innovate to go to Mars. What we do is we look for incumbents, right? So what I, generally speaking, what I do is I look for other companies selling to our same demographic, and I look for them, I look for those of them that are over 10 years old, hopefully over 100 million in revenue, usually not venture funded. And once I find those businesses, what I ask myself is just three questions. Number one, what would that business look like if it had a deep understanding of today's technology? Number two, what would that business look like if it started today with today's deep understanding of digitally native mothers? And number three, what would it look like if that business started today without any of its legacy baggage, debt, you know, buildings, thousands of employees or whatever, and then we rebuild it. So for example, our Bump Medical business unit, we started that business unit 10 months ago. On a personal note, one of the reasons that I got interested in that personally was, you know, when we had our third kid, I like, it's all of a sudden I looked up, you know, and I was like, wait, why was that so hard? You know, my wife was getting hit up with like free breast pumps and stuff, but I was like, well, wait a second. I pay Aetna a ton of money. What else am I allowed to have? And it was like, why is this so hard? Wait a second. Who are these companies that just sent her a free breast pump? How does their business work? And so we started it with one person inside the business, and we figured it out. Today, that business is 10 months old, I believe. Maybe we're 11 months old. It's got four people on it now. And it is the fastest growing DME that industry's ever seen, because we are a mom acquisition company, and it's doing millions of dollars of annual revenue already. It may be bigger than our Bump consumer business unit within a year or two.
So what that business does specifically, does it like help people to kind of like figure out all the insurance stuff and get like take advantage of that? Or
think about it this way. So I'm going to just use your family as an example, and anybody listening to this can kind of imagine it for themselves. All we do is we find out who your insurance is through. And then using technology, we tell you exactly what you're owed. So like, if you tell me you're on Aetna, Blue, POS, 77, Gold, whatever.
Wait, United, is that a good, is that qualifies or no? United?
Yeah, I think that's UHC, I think is what you got there maybe. But yeah, like ultimately what we do is we map out exactly what you have available. And then within the rules, there's a lot of rules. We will ask you the right questions and then electronically extract all that value. Like from your perspective, for you as a customer, you're sitting there thinking like, wait a second, why are all these free things just showing up at my house? You're like, what in the world is happening? It's free to you, right? But on the back end, the insurance companies hate us because we're extracting all the value, right?
Do you expect to get sued at some point?
Oh, no. This is all legal. Oh, no. We have armies of lawyers that make sure that we're not in the business of innovation, or, you know, we're not operating in any gray areas. We are thinking about things as like, you know, back to this original earlier thing I said, we are a mom acquisition company. We are heavily tech enabled. So we think a lot about how would those incumbents start if they knew about tech the way we do today. Like for example, let's just use, like I tell people I'm not trying to build a portfolio company. You know, I think you called us a portfolio.
You know, yeah, it's look, like, there are these companies that D2C portfolio, they buy like brands and stuff, but it's pretty much all about physical products. They're all kind of like,
I'm trying to be Procter and Gamble, man. I'm trying to be Procter and Gamble. Like when you go to Target or CVS or Walmart right now, and you go down to the aisle with deodorant, they all look like you got like 70 different brands there. But the truth is they're mostly owned by one of three major conglomerates. It's either Procter and Gamble, you know, SC Johnson. I mean, you're nodding, so you get it, right? Like our ambition is to be that size. I mean, look, Procter and Gamble is 187 years old. And I think at market close yesterday, it was something like 80 billion in revenue, almost 400 billion in market value. So to me, the way I think about e-commerce, like, here's the thing. And like, I know we're probably going a little long here, but here's the thing, your audience, if you want to like, you know, hopefully they don't get pissed off when I say this, look, e-commerce, we got to all of us in this e-commerce thing, we got to think bigger, way bigger. Here's the thing, like Procter & Gamble and many other large companies like it have been around for 100+ years old.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And on the other side, like if you and I were having beers or whatever, right, and we were average entrepreneurs, we'd be like, hey man, like that e-commerce company, they just they went public at $1 billion market cap. Like F that. Like if we're going to go take a swing as e-commerce people, right, let's go bigger. Like if you can make $1 of revenue, you can make $10,000 of revenue. If you can make 10,000, you can make $1 million. If you can make $1 million, you can make $1 billion. Let's go bigger, right? Like, here's the other thing, by the way. You and I both know, everybody listening to this also knows how fast e-commerce companies grow. Mm-hmm. So if it took Procter & Gamble 187 years to get to a $400 billion market cap, it's not going to take me 187. I think we can hit that. If we go public, I think we could hit that. I think we could hit it in 7 to 10 years, right? Wow. Now, look, even if I'm wrong, maybe it'll take me 20 years, but it's not going to take me 187.
What kind of, I mean, so what I'm curious, like, so, I mean, like, it's probably, like, the most exciting, like, conversation I've had, like, last, like 3 years, you know? So what, like, how, like, what got you to be thinking this way? What got you to be thinking this bigger? Like, seeing on this side of businesses, or just like getting pissed, like to think small, like what got you to think in those categories?
You know, I would be lying if I told you I knew the answer to that. I like my brain is just wired kind of weird. You know, the thing I think a lot about though is like, why can't we? Like, I guess here's the thing. I think I've always been an optimist. I think I've always been an optimist. And here's my thing. Like, anybody listening to this podcast has been around negative people. And if you really think about it, most of the people you deal with on a day-to-day basis are negative. They call themselves realists, right? They're like, oh, I'm just being a realist. Like, F that. Here's my thing. I think pessimists look smart. And I think optimists get rich. Because the pessimists, they're trying to look smart. They're trying to say, oh, Alex, here's the 77,000 ways you didn't think that you're going to fail, but let me help you because I'm like smart. You know, I'm a pessimist. I'm smart. I'll help you. F them. Because as optimists, I only have to find one way to make it work. Does that make sense?
This is this is gold.
See, this is why you said at the beginning, like now that we know each other a little bit, I hope this doesn't come across as disrespectful. You asked a question about like, hey, our Facebook ads, you know, we do a lot of ads.
Yeah.
Like, what's working, right? It's the wrong question to ask.
And
no offense to you, by the way, I'm just giving you a hard time, but I'm going to just use this as an example because I want to like, you know, give the audience one more thing to think about. And that is that like, look, you know, we all are affected by this whole iOS 14, you know, rollout that happened last April, right?
Yeah.
Like, everybody's like lying to each other, you know, oh, things are going good. I found a great hack, whatever. But the fact of the matter is CAC is 3 to 5x higher on average for my portfolio companies right now, including for us. Right. And here's the thing. If you think you're going to outsmart Facebook, I don't know what to say to you. Right. And look, what you should be worried about is the fact that it's probably only a matter of time before Google and some of the other big platforms lock down as well, or make it harder, right? Like everybody's like, oh, TikTok. Yeah, that's fine. Like exploit it while you can, but like CAC will always be rising. So I want to kind of just pull people back to that thing that I said way back at the beginning when you asked that question. And that is that from the earliest part of our business, in our DNA, like we knew, we never anticipated these changes. We just knew that CAC would always rise, right? Everything gets more expensive. Everything, gas, CAC, everything, right? What are you going to do about it? And that's the real question people should ask themselves, because the truth is CAC's going to keep rising. It's going to get more aggressive. But like the reality is, you know, I think you have, if you really start to think about this stuff, I believe in my heart that your listeners are going to inevitably come to the same conclusion that I did, which is that if you want to fight CAC, you have to think about going wider. You have to go wider. So I know this is going to sound like this is off topic, but I'll give you an example. Walmart the other day, well, maybe it was a couple weeks ago, Walmart announced that they were going to start with, you know, a delivery service. So not only to deliver their own stuff, but, you know, they could deliver other people's stuff, you know, kind of like fighting, you know, Uber Eats and DoorDash.
Okay.
Start to fight that, right? Oh, man. Well, then the internet gets crazy. Like, Walmart, you're so dumb. Are you like, no, it's rational. Look, here's the thing. Their CAC was rising. Their CAC was rising. And at the same time, like, so I actually have a podcast of my own as well. My co-host there, Ed, owns, you know, thousands of restaurants or whatever. And here's the thing, like, what I've learned about these delivery services is that, you know, he was telling, so he's got some, like, anyway, I'm not trying to promote my thing, but here's the thing.
He's got like, we'll try, so, guys, we'll link the podcast. We'll link the podcast somewhere. Go and sign up and listen. And
please
subscribe.
Do. Yeah. Like, here's the thing. He was telling me, just on today's episode, earlier today, was that at 700 of his restaurants, 50% of their revenue comes from customers they've never met or seen. They're coming through the DoorDashes and the Uber Eats. Look, you may not, your listeners right now, you're probably thinking like, what the hell does this have to do with me and e-commerce? It has everything to do with it. And it's because of first party relationships. Does that, you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah. So basically people buy like through, what you said is like people buy through DoorDash or like Uber Eats, and then they come to the restaurant. So they try the food first, like online or no, or
they don't come in. They don't come in. So like he was telling me 50% of his revenue at 700 plus restaurants.
Wow.
50% of his revenue is coming from these third-party services, and he has no direct relationship with the customer.
Wow.
How crazy is that? But when you start to think about that, no wonder Walmart's stepping into this, because the reality is if they can start to take away the relationship, the direct relationship with
the
other
customer
vendors,
base. Well, that's what Amazon did, right? Like with FBA.
Yeah. What do you think Walmart's going to staple to the outside of the bag? It's going to say Walmart ads on it, isn't it?
Huh.
Here's the thing. The reason I'm bringing this up, one more idea that I hope your audience takes into account, is that this whole e-commerce thing, we got to stop calling ourselves e-commerce, because the big boys, they think we're like that, some little tech nerds or whatever, e-commerce, whatever, right? Here's the reality. The future of retail belongs to those that own the affinity group. Let me say it again. The future of retail belongs to those that own the entire affinity group. I own Moms. I own the Mom affinity group, right? So for example, you said you had a kid. I am sure you guys at some point shopped at like Carter's or Oshkosh, yeah. Right? All these retails.
Yeah. We're subscribed to KiwiCo, like, you know, they have the educational stuff.
Yep.
Crate.
Yeah, I think I'm an investor in that one too. But anyway, you know, the thing is though, is that like, look, I'm not saying that those retail brick and mortar companies are gonna die. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that e-commerce, we as an industry need to start looking, acting, and thinking like the big retail folks, because it is more likely that we will take over retail than it is for them to take over e-commerce. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, like I know this is a half-baked idea, but I think the words we use limit us, right? So you know, like, for example, when you say like, or, you know, when I say like, I don't know, I'm a skinny Indian guy. Well, that like psychologically, that's going to bake into my head. And now like I'm not thinking about bodybuilding, right? Like it's become self-limiting, even though I didn't admit that to myself. It's become self-limiting. The same thing goes for e-commerce. Like, I hate it when people call themselves e-commerce, because what they've done is limited themselves to some little box, even though they won't admit it to themselves, right? So you asked me this question of like, why am I, like, when did I start thinking this big or whatever? I don't know the answer, but what I've learned from the earliest days is I think that words define what we will do and say. And if we say we're e-commerce, then it's hard for us to think bigger than e-commerce. Like, the biggest exits right now in e-commerce are like $10 billion.
But, was it 10? Like, which was that?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, you know, whether you're looking at Dollar Shave Club or whoever you want to look at, right? The biggest, exits are in the low billions, but the incumbents are worth hundreds of billions. Why aren't we fighting them? Let's go build that big. And so let's stop calling ourselves e-commerce, right? We're the future of retail. We're the future of everything.
Wow, man, this is like, the reason I ask those type of questions, because like most people we have, you know, are people who are like tactical, they're kind of like on a tactical level, they're doing stuff, but yeah, this has been like so insightful.
Yeah, well, I definitely don't want to take away from those, and I hope I didn't offend anybody. That's not my goal, right? I like to tell people that my real job, aside from all these other things, my real job is to make smart people think differently. And that's what I'm trying to do here. I'm not trying to make anybody feel weird or anything like that. But look, those tactics are important. You know, like anybody that's listening to this, get good at the skill that you're doing. You know, whatever your skill is, you got to get good at it. Whether it's Facebook marketing, whether it's social media, I'm not saying you shouldn't be good at it. But what I'm saying is apply context to it. Apply context. And that's the real thing here, is that the context is much larger. So anyway, I am bullish. I am so optimistic people listening to this thing. Look, I'm optimistic about e-commerce. I'm optimistic about your customers. I'm optimistic about all this stuff. But what I know is that the amount of effort you're putting in to make a buck, believe it or not, is the same amount of effort you need to put in to make a billion of those. The key is to have the context. And anyway, hopefully, like if even one person listening to your podcast starts to think differently, this is worth it.
I'll take some time and I'll like, I'll just like have all these ideas. I guess I need time to process them.
It'll take time, man. These ideas, I've been nerding out and thinking about this stuff for 20 years, right? It takes time, but it won't take you 20 years. You're smarter than me. It might take you a week. It might take you 2 weeks. It might take you 2 months, but you won't take 20 years. So yeah, take your time. Anybody listening to this, by the way, just noodle on it. Like, listen to the episode once and then set a reminder, listen to this episode again in a month. And your brain's going to like connect all the dots while you're sleeping anyway. But like, grow your companies more aggressively, right? Start thinking, why not me? Why not bigger? Those are, I know it sounds like I'm just trying to like, you know, pep talk everybody, but that's not, I'm just trying to like convince everybody to think bigger. You know, by the way, one last thing on this, one big idea on this, right? Like when, you know, all these like small thinking e-commerce people, like here's the thing, who's going to buy these media companies? Cause like, I guess, let me just be really blunt. I think it's more likely that e-commerce companies are going to buy old school media companies. I think that's more likely than the opposite. Meaning like, you know, I was talking to a CEO of a pretty large publicly traded media company a couple of weeks ago. And, I wasn't trying to be adversarial or whatever, but like, you know, they approached us originally about an exit, and I like to tell people we're never for sale, you know, but I just took the call anyway. And, you know, it was polite, but you could tell they were trying to like be the big guys and, you know, talk. And then what they said, you know, was, look, we should work together or we'll build you. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Come on. I was like, you're a publicly traded company. I've read your reports before I got on this call. I mean, you guys know, right? With publicly traded companies, almost everything's public, right? So I'm like, are you kidding me? Your revenue is all advertising and it's declined 40% last year. If that keeps going, you guys are out of jobs next year and your company's dead in 5. So like, give me a break. The reality is it's more likely that I'll buy you than you'll pivot into me, right? So let's not talk that way, right? And I'm not trying to like be some smartass here. I'm just trying to get your audience to think like this, right? Because like when you think about, like, here's the example I gave them. I was like, look, I know one of your biggest advertisers is X. Mm-hmm. I also know that one of my newest business units is designed to destroy X. And within 10 months, we're you know, at 10% of their revenue. And I think within like the next 24 months, we'll eclipse. Like you're right now, you're getting like $3 a lead off of them. I'm getting thousands of dollars per customer. Which business is better? You tell me. And so like, that's the thing, like, let's start thinking bigger. Why can't we think about like, you know, more aggressive tactics like this, right? You know,
wow.
Like,
I have a good question for you. I mean, I don't know if you consider it good. Like, I mean, your criteria gets very high, and it's okay. You're at 40 million a year, growing fast, profitable, bootstrap. If you want to grow like fast, right? I mean, and if you wanted to get like funding, you want to get like capital, right? Like, probably like, with these numbers, you could get like probably like 100 million. Like, I don't know, you can get a lot of funding to grow even faster. Why you don't want to do that?
Let me just make sure I understand the question. Is the question mm-hmm. like, why wouldn't we take, would we grow faster if we had money? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think we would. No. Look, our biggest resource, our biggest holdback, mm-hmm. or the thing that slows us down the most really is just recruiting like-minded people, you know, and having $100 million in the bank or whatever is not going to solve that.
I see.
So, you know, on the investing side, let me answer your question a slightly different way, because I think this mm-hmm. is an interesting question, by the way, because everybody that I meet yeah. thinks they have to raise money, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Here's a trick question I like to ask other investors. People are like, oh, Paul, you do 200 deals a year. How do you do it? Da, 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 right? I'm like, that's the wrong question. The question you should be asking is, why isn't everybody else? I think it's because people don't quite understand. Well, they're not thinking big enough, but they also don't understand venture economics. But here's the point. The trick question I ask them is, what do you believe is the differentiator between an investor that can generate 1,000x return on their portfolio versus an investor that, you know, fails and loses all their money? And just to kind of save you some time, what everybody always says, oh, it's capital, deal flow, and judgment. Capital, you need money to do this. And deal flow, like, you got to, like, no deal, you know, and then judgment, you got to be smart. And I'm like, no, that's dumb. No, that's, you're wrong. You need access. You need access. If the founder of the company that you should be in doesn't even know you exist or like you, doesn't matter how much money you have, right? So it's about access. Access is the differentiator between investors that make billions of dollars in returns versus mediocre failures. And the same goes for the people listening to this audience. You think money is going to solve your problems, but the truth is, if you can't solve the, if you can't get the business an inch off the ground with no money, mm-hmm. more money's not going to help. Money multiplies whatever's already happening. So if you're mm-hmm. already failing, you will fail faster. If you're growing, you could grow faster. But the truth is, like, I don't, if you wired me $100 million right now, I wouldn't even know what to do with it. What would we do with it? I have no idea, because it wouldn't help me find another business faster. It wouldn't help me, you know, I got to find more people that think like I do, and then set them free inside the company and say, let's go. I got to go do 2X. Because here's the thing. I said at the beginning, I keep telling my company, I want 2X growth every year. How do we get there? Well, in the earliest days, we could get there by split testing.
Yeah.
You know, we could get there by improving our Facebook ads, right? And, you know, mm-hmm. that can help you go from 1,000 a day to 10,000 a day, whatever, right? But now I got to go, you know, from 40 mil in 2021 to roughly 80 mil in 2022. How in the world do I do that? Well, yeah, we got to do some split testing, but we got to start taking bigger swings, more business units, faster growth within the existing business units, right? Like 2022 mm-hmm. for us is, you know, so like the stakes are getting bigger, right? How do you go from 40 to 80? And then next year, how are we going to go from 80 to 160? Right? I got some ideas. I always got ideas, right? Like, hey, if Starbucks can make billions of dollars off of preloaded coffee cards, the reality is, why don't we start bump finance? Why don't we do the same thing? Right?
Yeah, they keep a lot of money floating in there, right? Like the people just load the carts, right? And they have
Correct. Yeah, I mean, obviously your audience is smarter. They can go read the public earnings reports and see how they do it. But generally, yeah, they load the money onto the cards, and then it's a treasury, right? And they're able to leverage that. They are their own bank now. I mean, what is a bank but a place where we put all of our money in, and then they use some percentage of that money to lend out to other, what it, right? Like, this is the same. We are all anyway, every business is a DTC company now. Every business, every brick and mortar business is a DTC company. But the people listening to podcasts like this, we're the future. We just have to start thinking bigger than e-commerce.
Make sure you follow me on Instagram. It's Alex Ferrato, 3F at the end, because I share behind the scenes strategies and things we do in our 8-figure business and also in my personal life. So make sure you follow me and I'll see you there.
Right?
Wow.
Like you know, we just are in the middle of setting up a new business called Bump Life. That's going to be our fourth business unit, right? And why are we going to start that? Like, I'm going to just give you an example here because maybe your audience will use this for their own business. Bump Life. Well, here's the thing. You know, I grew up as an immigrant. You know, we weren't poor. We weren't rich. My dad had a small construction company. And you know, like I tell you that because I didn't come from any money. I have no formal financial training or anything like that. But, you know, I look around, you know, I drive around, drive the kids to daycare, whatever. And a couple months ago, I'm like driving by these little strip malls and I'm like, what are these like little insurance places? Like you see the little State Farm insurance, like I see these little offices, right? And then what do I see outside the office? I see like 10, like $30,000 or $40,000 cars and then one $200,000 Benz. And I'm like, wait, hang on. What is that? Oh, interesting. The average American changes their car insurance once every 18 years. But whoever signs them up is getting the residuals on that for those 18 years. That adds up. That adds up in a big way. So like now, 10 years ago, companies like Geico went online, nationwide insurance. You know, like now we might buy our insurance online. Yeah. And they don't have to pay those commissions to those agents, right? But still, here's my thing. The tallest buildings in any city in America are usually insurance companies.
That's it.
We're going to set up Bump Life. We're going to build the Expedia for life, auto, and home insurance. Because for families like you, it's hard to figure out. Like, do you know? I mean, I'm going to put you on the spot because I want your audience to listen the same way. Do you know if you are paying too much?
I have no idea either.
Why is that?
You're trying to solve something. You're trying to get an answer from these people. And it's like 2 hours and you get nothing done.
Bingo. And so you're like, it's probably okay. My insurance is probably okay, right? But like, here's the thing. Whoever sold you that stuff is still making money on it.
We had literally our broker, like literally, she misspelled my social security number. I come to the practice and like, and we cannot find your policy. Here's my card.
Yeah.
We cannot find your policy. I'm calling her. Like she misspelled my social security number. Yeah. How cool is that?
But she's still making money on you because like when you pay your insurance premiums, you know, whatever your monthly or yearly fee is, she's taking a percentage of it, you know? And now that may not seem like a lot, but then she might have 1,000 customers like you, right? Now all of a sudden those commissions add up. So I'm sitting here thinking like, well, wait a second. We're a tech company. Like we own the mom. We have the relationship with the moms already, right? We're a distribution centric company now. Let's put one person into this business and let's start figuring it out, you know? And this is the same thing that any other business listening to this should be doing. Look at what your customers are already spending money on adjacent to yours. You know, I'm not saying it's easy, by the way, but it is simple, but not enough people think this way. They think about like LTV, like, oh, we make our LTV is this because we sell enough of these red widgets. Oh, let's make a white widget and then we'll get a little bit more. It's like, that's wrong. You got to think about diversifying adjacent. Anyway, hopefully I didn't scare your listeners away, by the way, man.
I think the people who stayed until this point, I mean, these are like people who who listen. These are the people who try to understand, and you know, 1% of those, 10% of those will actually do it. I'll take these insights to our own business.
I love it. Yes. I love it, man. Yeah. Well, you tell me. I know we're over time. Where do you want to go? Where do we go on the topics here?
I think we will probably, we'll probably wrap up.
let's do this. If your audience has questions,
let's do it.
DMs are open on Twitter. They can email me, paul@resultsjunkies.com. But let's do more of these episodes, man. Like,
I love it, man.
Let's bring on people, right? I mean,
I love this conversation, man.
I'm happy to do it, man. Let's do it once a quarter. Let's do it once a month. I'm down.
Let's do it. Where are you based?
I live just outside of Washington, D.C. I'm in Virginia. And then our headquarters are actually in Peoria, Illinois. About half of our team is there. And then, you know, about half are just distributed around the U.S. So
one last question, right? And that's, I think, also be valuable for good, smart people who stayed until this point. What has been like single best channel for you to attract those like good, smart people, get them on board in terms of hiring?
Recruiting?
Yeah.
It's Twitter.
Twitter.
Yeah.
That's why you have 110, you have 111,000 followers on Twitter. So that has been like, as you said, it's been like the best channel. Like people reach out to you. Hey, I want to work for you, work with you. Like, want to join your company?
Cause that's just the medium that I prefer. The thing I want people listening to this to think about though, is that the medium doesn't matter, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Instagram, whether it's LinkedIn, whether you like TikTok, pick whatever medium you like and just start building in public. I mean, I think I said this at the bottom, the way I sort of ended my Twitter manifesto. Hopefully you'll put that in the show notes, but at the bottom I said, like, look, we're building in public, and in the worst case, we will inspire other people to think differently about their businesses. And in the best case, we'll also attract the like-minded people that want to come build with us. And that's good. So pick your medium. It doesn't matter whether you're good at podcasts, like don't try to like create 77 different profiles. I think that's the worst thing anybody doing this can listen, can do, but pick what you're good at, you know, and then just commit. And, you know, here's the plan. Just three new posts a day. One new post a day if you can, and reply to 10 other things in the same industry every day. Just that's it. Every day. That's all you got to do. And whether you're doing it on TikTok or you're doing it on YouTube, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's the consistency. So pick one medium. Like you mentioned 112,000 followers. That didn't happen overnight. It just happened through consistency, you know? So yeah, but recruiting is like my biggest challenge. I would bet you it's everybody listening to this. It's their biggest challenge too, whether they know it or not. You're not gonna get, if you're still listening this long, if you are even just for a second thinking about how, well, okay, maybe you agree with me now that like, hey, let's aim bigger. If you agree with me, you have to understand that to get there, you're not gonna be able to do it alone. You can start a business alone. Anybody can start a business, but very few can actually grow it. And to grow it, what you really need to do is start to recruit, you know? And there is a difference between recruiting and hiring. Hiring is like, that's people that come to you through the front door, you know? More often than not, they're the B players. The A players need to be recruited. They're happy where they are. They're probably doing just fine. But you got to build in public. That's how they're going to find you. That's how you're going to find them. You know?
That's so true. Wow. We've had like probably 7 people join because they've seen like my videos or somewhere like,
We are all personally and professionally, we are all DTC companies now. All of us. If you want your career to get better, you want your wallet to get better, your bank account to get better, your business to get better, we are all DTC. We're not e-commerce, retail, B2B, SaaS. We're not any of that. We are all D2C. And you got to start acting accordingly.
So that's the context, right? That's the context that we live in, pretty much.
In 2022, this is the way the world's going, right? Like, who you knew, you know, like 25 years ago, who your dad, you know, was determined what opportunities you had available to you. Today, because of social media, your audience is really, you know, going to determine what opportunities are available to you. Right. And you don't need 100,000. You know, the one blog post that changed my life, I hope anybody listening to this will read it. If you Google 1,000 true fans, I just Google that. That blog post years ago changed everything for me, because it was like, hey, look, you don't need to have 1 million followers. You need to have 1,000 people that would buy anything that you create. And that's an interesting way to look at it. So anyway, I'm curious, man. I hope people stayed this long. If you look, for anybody listening this long, if you love it, I hope you'll share this, these ideas with one person. If you absolutely hated it, share this with, you know, 10 people you hate.
Either way is good. Either way is like any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah. I'll ramble your ear off if you let me, but I'm really optimistic. I'm really hopeful for the people listening that they will take even just one little idea here and apply it to their own business. Mm-hmm. I think it's worked for me, and the companies I've been, you know, working with for years now, and I'm pretty confident it'll work for them, for you too. So.
Yeah, many, like it's a total like paradigm shift. We'll have also like notes from this whole like call. And basically we'll share it with you, with your audience as well. So in case you want to like kind of like in a text format.
Yep.
Cool. Thank you so much. I mean, we definitely should do it again. I loved it. I love this conversation.
Man. Hey, count me in. I'm ready to record the next one with you whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you everyone who listened until this point. So yeah, I guess, you know, if you listen until this point, you're a smart person. That's what I say. Like, I mean, if people, like, I don't have a lot of followers. Like, I don't have like, you know, like I have like, I don't know, 30,000 on YouTube, 15 or so thousand on Instagram, but it must be smart. I mean, like, cause you know,
well, you know, here's the bottom line though. The follower counts don't matter. It's a vanity metric. It's a vanity metric. Like, you know, you mentioned 100,000 followers. I don't think about it that way. The real question is how many actually engage with you?
Yeah.
That's the big question, right? Because otherwise it's just fickle. So yeah, I mean, like, don't worry about how many you have. Worry about the engagement, you know? Anyway, like I feel like I'm becoming like, you know, Tony Robbins here or whatever. I don't mean to.
All right, Paul, let's wrap it up. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. This was fun.
It was amazing. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for listening to my podcast. Now, if you're looking for help scaling your e-commerce business or advertising campaigns on Facebook and other platforms, then I want to invite you for a free strategy session. We help entrepreneurs scale from 6 figures to 7 figures and even to 8 figures with their e-commerce businesses. So if that's what you're looking for, then I want to invite you. There should be a link somewhere here so you can apply for a free strategy call, and we'll see how we can help you out.